General Masorah of Parashat Bal Peh is the legacy of every Jew. We all share in that same Masorah. Alongside that general Masorah of Parashat Bal Peh, there are also private Masorahs that different individuals, different groups of individuals have received. That there are family masoras, where we have certain family traditions. There are in larger groupings, someone belongs to a certain chassidus. There's a masora, an individual masora, as part of that identification, as part of that affiliation. And one of the private masoras with which we're blessed, potentially, if we take advantage of the blessing, is a masora associated with a yeshiva where one learns. To learn here in yeshiva, it means to potentially be a recipient of the Masorah of Soloveitchik. The first and foremost way to try to provide a kli, a base kibbutz, but for that bracha is to learn as much as possible firsthand his Torah. Hein b'halocha, hein b'machshava. It's in sort of in that vein and in that context. I thought that maybe we'd spend a few minutes today, just beginning with the beginning of Kol Dor Yidofek and trying to understand and highlight a few of the themes that he touches upon. Probably in terms of the focus on Medinas Yisrael, so that comes more towards the middle part and the concluding parts of the essay. I'm not sure how much we'll get there, but Ol Chazon Amored Miyad. The love begins, and hopefully I won't get distracted, and we'll come back and reflect on why he begins this essay, this reflection on Medinas Yisrael this way. But he begins with the riddle, the enigma of Tzadik Varala. And he says that a person can reflect upon that challenge of theodicy. How is it possible that in a world created by the Ribbono Shel Olam, who's only Tov, and Kolmado Avir Rachmona L'Tav Avir, how can it be that we encounter Ra, that we encounter evil, that there is suffering? He says that a person can reflect upon that, can react to that in either of two contexts, or either of two mindsets. he distinguishes between a kiyum gorali and a kiyum yiudi. I'm not sure if there is a very good translation, but maybe an existence of fate versus an existence of destiny. And the existence of fate, he explains, is when a person is primarily an object, meaning he's subjected to all kinds of forces which are beyond his control. What happens in the world, what happens to a person individually, what happens to us collectively, nationally, is not something that we can control. So a person is sort of, again, passive, an object. That's the existence of faith. And when, in that context, in that mindset, of a person reflects on the riddle of Tzadik Viralo, so he does so, again, sort of just passively, philosophically. Alternately, the Rav says, there is an existence of destiny whereby a person isn't simply a passive object controlled by, subjected to all kinds of forces, but a person who's a subject, a person who transforms, a person who is active, proactive. And on that level, the Rav says, so the response to Ra is not an abstract philosophical question of how can it be in the Rivom Shalom's world of the Rivom Shalom who's Ach Tov and his world, which is Tov Ma'od, how can it be that there's Ra? But rather, the question is, what should my reaction to Ra be? So here, just perhaps to elaborate a little bit, referring to, again, the philosophical reflection which arises out of the kiyum gorali, the existence of fate. So the Rav writes as follows, Mitoch ha-sheila ha-kishya ha-pitaron ve-ha-terutz, who bali day nisuach metaphysiki shel hara she'al yadeha mitpasher hu im oto hara u'menasa lachpot alav. Mishtamesh hasovel b'koach ha-hashata ha-sikrit she'chunan bo me'eis ha-boret, that's the one suffering utilizes the capacity for intellectual abstraction with which HaKadosh Baruch Hu graced the person, ad kedei hashlaya atzmit, until the point of self-deception. The person fools himself by kfira b'mtziyot hara ba'olam. The person engages in, the Rav says, metaphysical speculation, until he's able to come to the conclusion that the answer to the problem of Tzadik Viralo is that it's a mistake in our perception, that there really is no such thing as evil in the world. We'll come back to this in a minute, when we're doing Hashem, what the Rav is referring to, and what his critique is, how his critique is intended. By contrast, the Rav says that the Torah, with its realistic approach to a person and to human experience, says that Misha rotzeh lahatot et atzma al yedei hesach hadas min hakera shebahavaya v'al yedei romantizatzia shel chayei ha'adam, a person who wants to mislead himself by trying to just distract himself from this rupture within existence by romanticizing human life, Einu ela shoteh v'hozeh hazayah. He's not in touch with, he's delusional. אי-אפשר להתגבר על מפלצת הרע במחשבה פילוסופית ספקולטיבית. You can't overcome the problem of evil through philosophical and speculative thinking, and that's why the Torah says that a person just accepts the fact of incomprehensible ra in the world. Yeshno ra shelo nitan leperush lehavana. There is ra in the world that we can't understand. And instead, what the Rav characterizes as the halachic approach is to ask what one's response to ra is supposed to be. Let's perhaps elaborate both of these approaches. M says the first approach, on a certain level, the Rav's very, very, very stinging criticism notwithstanding, is very much along the lines of what the Rambam writes in the Mora. The Rambam writes in the Mora that there is an equation between the ultimate good is existence. The ultimate good is to be, is to exist. That's the ultimate good. Anything that we perceive as ra, says the Rambam, in truth, is really just less good. So if the baseline is to not exist, and then a person is alive, but he walks with a limp, Rachman Ritzlan. So the Rambam says the fact that a person has a limp is not something which is sort of has its own absolute value. It's just less bracha. It means the person has less bracha. And when you think about it, what the Rambam is saying, there's something very, very profound and a tremendous insight in what the Rambam is saying. And hear this, Rav Elson. And we'll see, none of this is the focus of the Rav's very, very stinging arrows of criticism. But there's something like this. When you think of often, maybe always, the complaints, the grievances, the frustrations we have, it's because we have a certain baseline of entitlement. We assume that we're entitled to a certain baseline. We assume we're entitled to personal success, to get married and to raise a family and for that to be something which is very fulfilling. We assume that we're entitled to financial security, to professional success. We feel blessed if, in addition to all that, I win the lottery. Oh, now Ribbono Shelom is sending me a bracha. In addition to all that, I don't know, my kids win the award in school. So not only are they good kids, they win the Pekiyas award in school. Oh, not now it's already a bracha. Now I have to feel some hakaras hatov. There's a sense of entitlement. And what the Rambam is saying is, no, everything, the fact that a person exists, is the ultimate tov. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Ani avir kol tuvi al panecha, so the Rambam says it means, I'm going to explain existence to you. Because there's an equation between existence and tov. Vayar lukim eskol asher, vayar lukim ki tov, vayar lukim ki tov, vayar lukim eskol asher, and they tov ma'od. So it's not sort of just some abstract manipulations of concepts. There's a profound, profound musar vort and orientation that this Rambam, by again, which does ultimately deny evil. It says that evil is less of a bracha. What we call evil is less of a bracha. Let's say you have two brothers. that they share the same birthday. And on their birthday, so they both get a letter in the mail, and each one opens the letter, and there it is from some benefactor that they've never met, for whom they've never done anything whatsoever in their lives. They have no claim, they have nothing. So it's a birthday check, birthday card with a check enclosed. One of them gets a check for $20 million, the other one gets a check for $10 million. So what's going to be? The one who gets the check for $10 million is going to file suit for discrimination. That, you sent my brother a $20 million check for his birthday, and you only sent, and my birthday check is only $10 million. Person can't have tainas on, you owed me a bigger gift. So what's the Rav's criticism, Reb Azoy? And that's what the Rambam means by there's no such thing as Ra in the world, because existence is Tov. To be alive, and then on top of that for us, to be Jewish, to be alive, Jewish, are the ultimate brachas. Okay, a person has better health, more bracha. A person, Achman Atzlan, has less health. It's not Ra. Maybe it's less bracha, but what are you going to do? You're going to file suit because how come his birthday check is, I don't understand what your cheshbon is, that his birthday check is $20 million and my birthday check is $15 million and you owe me an explanation? And until you give me that explanation, I'm not going to thank you for the $15 million birthday check. So Eba Zoy, what's the Rav's criticism? What does he intend? So Kimiduma, that one has to understand as follows. There is ultimate reality, and there's human reality. And when you read it, you see that the Rav basically, you read carefully, he doesn't use these words, but he's saying so mefurish. Ultimate reality means reality as perceived by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what's really happening in the world is ultimate reality. But there's also human reality. We don't perceive or experience the world from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's vantage point. We can't, and we never ever will. L'Yimos HaMashiach, we won't either. It's not the case that only at this point in history that we don't have that perspective. By definition, that chasm, that infinite gap has to remain. So we can't understand ever the world, perceive, experience the world from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's vantage point. So there's ultimate reality, and there's human reality. And what the Rav says is that what the Rambam tells us, he doesn't mention the Rambam by name, but that approach is only intended to deal, it only deals with Ra, again, in a philosophical sense. How can there be evil in the world of the Ribon Shalom who's only good? And Kol Ma'adu Ovid Rachman L'Tav Ovid. But the problem that we encounter is not only a philosophical one, it arises from our experience. It arises from human reality. And within human reality, avada avada, we experience things as Ra. Within human reality. You hear that distinction, Rav Asai? It's crucial. Again, a moshel nadav v'dami. You take a baby for his inoculations. So avada avada, what's happening is good, and avada avada is a very big mitzvah to do so. So that's sort of in the moshel. That's the moshel of the ultimate reality that the parents who have maturity can understand. On the baby's level, so the baby's level is he's minding his own business. he didn't get into trouble this morning, and his parents shut him to the doctor. And the doctor takes out this big needle and winds up and stabs him with it. You can't explain it to the. You can't explain that fact away. That's just a given. That's a given. That's what the Rav says on the human level, in terms of how we experience reality. We don't experience ultimate reality. We experience human reality, and halacha deals with human reality. How do you see that? You see, there's a different bracha for b'soros tovas than there is for b'soros ra'as. On b'soros tova, a person says atova ameitiv. On a b'soros ra'as, a person says dayin ha'emes. Koma de'ovid rachmano le'tav ovid. I don't know if there's an ultimate distinction or differentiation between the tov and the ra, but certainly on the level of human experience in our world, in our realm, there is a difference between what we experience as tov and what we experience as ra, and halacha recognizes that. Yes, you make a zacha either way, but chai v'adam v'acha v'acha k'shem shem v'acha l'tova, and yes, either way that bracha is supposed to be, Rashi explains when the Gemara says the kibbulin of the simcha, it means belev of shalem. A person is supposed to accept it wholeheartedly, but at the end of the day, they're different brachas. One's a bracha of hatova ametiv, one's a bracha of dayina emes. And that's what the Rav is saying, that the problem of tzaddik v'ralo, and what the Nevi'im wanted to understand, was not only, they wanted to be able to understand tzaddik v'ralo, not only theoretically, but they wanted in terms of, on a human level, to be able to experience that. And that's like impossible. That's impossible. Maybe just to read a few lines in this context. Vadai, when the Torah says that yeshno ra, sevel, v'yeshnam yisuri sha'ol v'tofes ba'olam, there is evil, there is suffering in the world. He says, v'adai ki eidutah shel ha'Torah al ha'yitzur shehu tov ma'od amitasi. Of course, what the Torah says is entirely true, that reality is only good, exceedingly good. Ulam, ein ze amor el mibchinat ha'hatzatza ha'ein sofit shel ha'yotzer. But that characterization, that classification, is Vayara Lukim, is from the vantage point, the perception, the infinite perception of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Behistaklut hachelkit shel ha'adam ha'sofi, given the partial perspective of finite man, so then, ein hatov hamuchlat, this absolute good, sheba yitzira, in existence, nachsaf. It's not something which is revealed. On the human level, yeshno ra, shalom itam leperush ulahavana. Now listen here, the Rav gives a moshel, which seems to be a famous moshel, and not his own, but listen to exactly how he presents it. Moshel l'mahadav adama. La'adam ha-mistakel b'shatiach nehadar. He looks at a rug, a tapestry, something. Ma'aseh choshev. With incredibly exquisite embroidery. Shetziyur ma'hiv ayin makum alav. And that there's, again, embroidered within it, is an amazing picture. However, he looks at it mitzido hasmali. He's looking at it backwards. Looking at it backwards from the wrong angle. Ha'im habatazo, will this looking at the embroidery tehafeich makor chavaya estetit nisgava, is he going to have some exalted aesthetic experience? He's looking at it upside down, inside out, and backwards. Okay, so that's a famous moshel, right? The famous moshel. Some give the moshel if you read a book or you go to a play, and the play consists of four parts, and one is only present for the second part. So it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. Okay, if you would have seen the first part and you would have known what's going to happen in parts 3 and 4, so then you'd see that part 2 makes sense. Others give a mashal, which seems to be closer to the mashal that the Rav is paraphrasing, of someone doesn't know how, no one's ever seen how clothing is manufactured. So they see this beautiful, beautiful swath of material, beautiful velvet material. And then they see this tailor or seamstress, so what are they doing? So they're taking, seemingly very destructively, they're taking the scissors, and they hear this beautiful, everything is proportioned, and the angles are perfect, perfectly rectangular, and what's this tailor or seamstress doing with the scissors? So right away they're cutting and throwing away part of it. So it's crazy, it's destructive. Okay, so if you know what the process of making a dress or a suit is, then you understand what the tailor's doing. If you just sort of parachute in for this one moment and you don't know where things are headed and you don't know what it's laying the groundwork for, so then it just seems very destructive. So that seems to be more or less the marshal that I was giving also. But the emphasis is it isn't. The Rav is talking about even if you see everything, he Dafka doesn't give that marshal of that you see part two of the play and you miss the opening part and the concluding parts. He doesn't say that you only see the tailor at one stage of his work. No, he gives a mashal, but he, Bedafka, gives you a mashal. No, you're seeing everything. You're seeing the whole embroidery, but did you ever look at needle points? Instead of looking at the front of the needle point, so you look at the back of the needle point. So the front of the needle point is this really nice picture that the kids had a lot of fun making. Look at the back. So the back of a bunch of knots and a bunch of loose threads and stum garnish. So the Rav gives that marshal. What's the difference between his marshal and the other mashal and the other type of marshal that we mentioned? Is that it's not that our limitation is only because, in terms of the historical timeline, we only have a partial view and a partial perspective. That implies, no, if only we could see everything, Zet Sefer Toldos HaAdam, if only we'd be privy to the entire book of Zet Sefer Toldos HaAdam, then everything would make sense. And that's what I'm saying, no, that's not true. It's not true. Rav Shach has in his Sefer, Aviezi, al-Harambam, in Hilchus Yisodei HaTorah, so he says that he heard from a Velvo, B'Shem Reb Chaim, that what people say, that lo'osad lovo, we won't need to have a emunah, because everything will be with Yediyah, is not true. And it can't be true. Because if there's a mitzvah to have a emunah, tzadik v'emunasa yichya, so mitzvahs are not betelos lo'osad lovo. So it's not true. It's not true that everything is going to be retrospectively understood and fully appreciated. It's not true. Okay, so the way it's sort of presented here, so it seems like sort of a technical argument from mitzvahs and not betelos. But what's intended, what's clearly intended, is this. Again, profound yourself, that the reason a person doesn't understand is not only because, oh, we don't know how history is going to play itself out for the next 20, 50, 100 years. Even when a person will be able to view the entire timeline from Bias Odom ad Keitz Hayom, and a person won't understand. And it's for that reason that Halacha says that when we're conflicted or even tormented by Rachman al-Islam, the problem of Ra, so on the human level, a person can never understand. Everything we said from the Rambam, notwithstanding, watch a person in the throes of a horrible machla, and it doesn't cut it. It doesn't cut it. As compelling as it is philosophically, as true as it is philosophically, as profound as its Musar implications are, it doesn't cut it. You see someone, Rahman al-Islam, in the throes of the horrible machla, so you say, What do you mean there's no sechein? What do you mean there's no? What do you mean there's no ra? What do you mean? What do you mean with a mashal of one check for $15 million, one check for $20 million? And that's what the Rav says. That's what his criticism. His criticism is if one thinks that first approach is one which not only solves the philosophical problem but also solves the human problem. He's criticizing it on that level. The Rambam intends it. Rambam doesn't intend it on the level in which the Rav is criticizing it. So the second mindset with which a person approaches evil in the world, again, is from the Kiyum Yehudi, the existence of destiny, where a person isn't just an object, not just subjected to things beyond his control, but a person is a subject. So his reaction to Yisurim is not the ultimate why question, because on the human experiential level, that can't be answered. The question that he asks is, what am I supposed to do? What's my reaction supposed to be? I can't control what happens, but I can control what it represents. I can control what its impact is upon me. What am I supposed to do? Ech yisnahega adam be'es tzara. Mayasa adam v'lo yimog b'yisurav. What is a person supposed to do that he isn't destroyed because of the yisurav? התשובה ההלכית לשאלה זו פשוטה מאוד. The halachic answer to this question is very simple. היסורים באים כדי לרומם את האדם, to uplift the person, לטהר את רוחו ולקדשו, to purify him, to sanctify him, לנקות את מחשבתו, to cleanse his thought, ולצרפו, to purify מכל פסולס השטחיות, from all superficiality, usiagei hagasut, and all forms of arrogance, va'adenet nafsho, to make his soul more refined. Skipping a few words, kolloshal davar hayisurin tafkidam, the role, the function of Yisurim is l'takena tapagum v'ishiyuto shel adam, to galvanize a person, to correct, to perfect that which is blemished within his personality. When you think about it, so something very paradoxical emerges. Our knee-jerk reaction when Rachman Latzlan, we see a person who is beset by Yisurim, we see that helplessness, which is what it is on the physical level. We see that helplessness as something which is demeaning and very, very undignified, the opposite of what it means to be. It means to be dignified is to be independent, to be sort of in control of a situation. And here's the person, Rachmana Litzlan, beset by Yisurim, and none of that is the case. A person can't take care of himself, a person can't fend for himself, a person experiences dependence upon other people. And we see that as being, again, demeaning and undignified. And on one level it is. It certainly is on one level. But what emerges, according to what the Rav is telling us, is that this experience is one which really, if a person reacts appropriately, is one that potentially restores dignity. Because if the experience of Yisurim, again, does galvanize a person to tshuva, it does galvanize a person to strip away layers of superficiality from his life. It does cleanse the person of arrogance. So ultimately, the person is really becoming more of a person, a greater person, a more dignified being than he was when, again, superficially, he was just in control of everything. Within the essay, the Rav transitions to talking about Medinas Yisrael. Again, the essay was, as you know, was originally delivered here as a drasha in Tavshin Tesh Zayin in 1956 on Yom HaAtzmaut. So the Rav continues as follows: V'gam achshav, after the now as well, umdim. Anu omdim biyamim trufim, yimei zam umetzuka, nigu'ei pa'ot ulimudei yisurim anu. We live in times of distress. We've been afflicted. We've been experiencing the cauldron of suffering. Again, 1956, going back 15 years, i.e. to the Holocaust. So, yasanu be'inuyim she'en kamotam betoldos alfei shnos galus. The suffering of the years of the Holocaust is unparalleled and unprecedented in Jewish history. Elbonu shmad. Then the Rav continues and says that Parshat HaSeva lo nechtama b'yisudah shel Medinat Yisrael. And it's not the case that we turned a page entirely in 1948 and that we transitioned, that the Parsha of suffering concluded and a new Parsha opened. That's not the case. Certainly a new Parsha began, but it overlaps with the previous parsha. Parshat HaSeva lo nechtama b'yisudah shel Medinat Yisrael. The parsha of suffering didn't come to a conclusion, didn't conclude with the establishment of Medinat Yisrael. Kayom hazeh the Medina is still in a state of crisis and danger. And all of us are full of fear and trembling for the future of the Jewish state. But one of the remarkable qualities of this essay, despite its references to the then current events, is how incredibly timely every part of it remains ad hayom hazeh. That Parshat HaSeva lo nechtama b'yisudah shel Medinat Yisrael . It wasn't only true in 1956 when the Medina existed in the pre-67 borders, which, if you look at a map, were just so tiny, with Syria having the advantage of the high ground and in the Golan Heights and all the vulnerability which that represented, and many other factors. But clearly both the suffering as well as the danger, they were ongoing in 56, in Tavshin Kazayin, they're equally ongoing in Tavshin Ayin Tes as well. I don't know if it was easier in 1956, or maybe we sort of excuse ourselves by thinking it was easier in 1956 to recognize that reality. But you live with miracles long enough, so you begin to take the miracles for granted. And the Avada Avada, Eretz Yisrael, Dinas Yisrael always exists in mortal danger. With Iran, with all the surrounded, as Chazal described in the Gemara about Aseh, it's true in Golis, but it's true in Medinas Yisrael also. Aseh, which is surrounded by 70 Chayos Torfos, so the danger is very much current. It's not only historical. It's not only trying to read this essay. You have to enter a mindset of 1956. No, it's true, and it's true. It's true. Avad, it's true today as well. The suffering is also ongoing. Just within the past week, There were more casualties. You go some time to in the summers. So we've been blessed for many years to be in Eretz Yisrael. Well, one of those summers, there was a pigua. And we were given transportation to one of the Levayas. That particular Levaya happened to be from the Chayal Bodei from Philadelphia, who had been killed. So it was on Har Herzl. So you walk around on Har Herzl, and you look at the Matzevus, and you look at the birth date, and then you look at the day that the Chayal was killed on Kiddush Hashem. There are just no words. It's heartrending. It's mind-boggling. There are no words. This one was 18. And we need to think of it not only mathematically. We need to think of it. I think most of us sort of just begin living at age 18. Sort of when we sort of first mature and they're ready to begin. It's not sort of, don't think of 18 as, well, you mentioned the saying of Bam Shivim Shana, so chutch 25%. No, it's... This one's 19. Occasionally, you see someone who was really old. He was in his 20s. In his 20s, when he was Mosa Nefesh, Al Kiddush Hashem, and killed. Parashat HaSeva Lo Nechtama, the Yisudah Shel Medinas Yisrael, and obviously it's true for not only the Chayalei and Chalalei Tzahal, it's also true for all the victims of the Figuim, Rachman of Tzlan as well. Parshat HaSevel Nechtama B'Yisudah Shel Medinat Yisrael. And the Mechayev, which the Rav talks about here in this essay of Yisurim, that Yisurim are a Mechayev, a reaction. Not a reaction of complaint. And as much of a Chiyev as there is, and there certainly is a Chiyev of Hishtavlos on a practical natural level, there is a chiyuv hishtadlus on that level. The Torah talks about having an army, and it means that one is supposed to strategize militarily, politically, how to defend ourselves. But none of that in any way diminishes the mechayev that the Rav talks about in this essay that when we do encounter suffering, when we do encounter Yisurim, and the first thing is that we should encounter it. The first thing is that there shouldn't be any sense of detachment. Whether those of us who live outside of Eretz Yisrael do so legitimately or illegitimately, even assuming that one is talking about someone who's doing so legitimately, and there obviously is such a category, we all need to recognize that everyone who lives in Eretz Yisrael, and on top of that, even more so, all the chayalim, are doing something which is not their obligation more than our obligation. But Baruch Hu wants Jews to live and to populate Eretz Yisrael. And that's true of all of us. And there's supposed to be an army that defends us in Eretz Yisrael. And I don't know that Al Pidin, that there's really a difference. I don't know. I don't know anything. Nothing I say is ever intended la halacha, but there doesn't seem to be any difference between whether a person is born in Eretz Yisrael or born in Chutz La'aretz in terms of whether what that obligation would be. So what they're doing, and I'm not talking about any, I'm talking about attitudinal implications now, not practical implications. We should recognize they're doing our shlichus. Okay, so maybe what we're doing is also a shlichus of another part of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants in the world. I don't mean to delegitimize what everyone else is doing, Chas v'Shalom. So there shouldn't be any sense of detachment. There should be complete sense of identification. And we should encounter and be experiencing the reality of this sentence of Parshat HaSeva Lo Nechtama B'Yisuda Shel Medinas Yisrael. And the Mechayev, again, of L'Romemet HaAdam, L'Nakos Es Machshavto, to cleanse his thought, to peel away all the shitchios, all the layers of superficiality and pettiness in our lives, so we encounter that Mechayev. I'm a little bit over time. But basically, just to jump ahead to one other theme, again, so prominent here in the essay, the Rav explains that basically there are two ways to be ma'orer a person. As it were, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has two primary ways to awaken, to arouse, to try to stimulate and evoke a response. And the tzad hashav of the two is to replace the ordinary with extraordinary. Because the ordinary we sort of get used to, so it doesn't evoke a reaction. It's not a source for us of hisaros. But the extraordinary, the Rav says, can come in the form of ra and suffering. That's something extraordinary. Or the extraordinary can come in the form of extraordinary chasadim, extraordinary nisim. And the emes is that in Medinas Yisrael, those two mechayvim converge. And they coexist side by side. The mechayev of the extraordinary suffering is there. Again, the news of the last week, not that hochocha is necessary, but once again reflects it. And avada, the incredible, miraculous bracha of our having Eretz Yisrael, the fact that it's been 71 years in no way diminishes from its miraculousness, from the extraordinary, extraordinary providential chesed shevo, and that really, in thinking about Eretz Yisrael, in identifying with Eretz Yisrael, so both of these mechayvim converge. And when the time of year is such that we are even more focused, so clearly recognizing these mechayvim and what each of us can and should do individually, what perhaps collectively is something that should be first and foremost on our minds.